Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sat down with Seamus Fogarty just ahead of the release of his new record. And we have a wonderful chat. We talk about growing up in the west of Ireland and relocating to London, and we talk all the usual stuff, you know, record shops and clubs and school and bring it right up to, as I mentioned, the release of his new record. Before we get on with the show, just quickly, a big thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to Domino Records for helping put this one together. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then once you finish listening to this episode, then go and have a look in the archives, because you'll find about 180 episodes now of chats with some of your favourite musicians, actors, comedians, producers, DJs, acts as diverse as, Fatboy Slim to Butch Vig, through to James Lavelle, through to Suede, through to Maxine Peake, Amanda Abington, Chuck D. Go and have a route around in the archives, because if you enjoyed the format of the chat, then I'm sure you'll find other chats in the archives that you'd enjoy. And if that's not enough and you still want some extra content, then I do also have a Patreon page where each week I upload four radio shows where I play some records and talk about them. I'll put up sort of video episodes and unique podcast episodes and loads of other stuff. And you can get involved over there for, I think it's about 97p a week. Go and have a look over there. That's at patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. You can find out about everything actually that I've mentioned on Off the Beat and Track. That's not beaten, Off the Beat and Track podcast.com. Right, back to business. Please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful Seamus Fogarty. It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, joining me today, Seamus Fogarty. Hello.
Hey, Stu. Nice to be here. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
I am in Walthamstow, East London, and it's pissing rain outside. That's where I'm at.
I'm about 20 miles up the road on the cusp of Essex, and it's grey and miserable here. But we're going to talk music, and that's always a ray of sunshine. But in the meantime, just quickly before we get on to the playlists, Seamus, how have you found the last sort of 6-7 months professionally and personally?
I found them absolutely woeful. In every respect, I've always seen, you know, because I come from the west of Ireland, and you know, I've always seen London as a kind of base from where I can kind of, you know, go and do gigs or shoot home to see my folks and my family back in Ireland, and just for that to kind of evaporate. And not being an option has just been, really difficult. And professionally, both myself and my partner are full-time musicians. And she Emma, she plays with Jarvis Cocker and John Hopkins, and so she had loads of shows lined up for the whole year, and that kind of just disappeared. So yeah, it's been pretty tough. Yeah, it's been pretty tough. Yeah, but I've still been really busy, which is good, I guess. You know, with this new album and stuff coming out, it's just been loads and loads and loads of stuff to do, and even more so in a way because, you know, I've had to do a lot more kind of social media stuff, which is usually something I'd be kind of like, but you know, it's just in the absence of, you know, actually getting out there and doing like in stores and things like that. Yeah, it's been the only kind of, it's been one of the only ways to kind of communicate with people, you know.
It's been really strange. Like, you know, I've been doing this podcast a couple of years, and it has felt like, you know, if I'm to try and find a positive in you know, a very negative situation, in the last sort of 6 months, all of a sudden it's been a lot easier talking to creative people because, you know, it's not good that they're not out on the road, but they're having to sort of look at things like podcasts and things like that to kind of get their stuff out there. So and a big positive in that is I run a live music venue that's been closed for 7 months, so this has been, you know, having the opportunity to talk to creatives and you know, it's been quite nice. It's been a welcome distraction from a lot of the stuff that's going on outside our windows, do you know what I mean?
No, it's true. There are some positives. Even like I'm listening to lots more podcasts than I ever did because I'm doing, you know, I'm trying to do a bit more exercise and, you know, go out there and jog and stick on the headphones. And so, yeah, I guess there is a little kind of chinks of light.
And you got to grab that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And be thankful. Yeah.
Okay. Seamus, track one. What's the song with the greatest ever intro?
Oh, yeah, so I said, I mean, it's a tricky one.
You can have some honourable mentions if you're finding it that tough, mate.
Well, you know what, I just went with Captain Beefheart, sure enough, which is the first track off that album, Safe as Milk. And I think because, as well as being like an incredibly cool kind of opening to the track, it's just an incredibly cool opening to the whole album. And I remember when I bought that album, like, you know, I didn't have a clue really who Captain Beefheart was. I was just I was reading an interview with Steve Malcolmus from Pavement, and he mentioned like, oh, this Captain Beefheart was like a big influence. And I was like, the fuck is he's Captain Beefheart? And I was like, it's like, it's a really cool name, so he must be a pretty cool dude. I just didn't have a clue about anything about Captain Beefheart other than that. And then I was living in Dublin at the time, and there was a record store on Con Street, and it had like a bargain bin outside, and you could, you know, I saw Safe as Milk for a fiver, so I was like, you know, I'll give it a shot. And I remember I arrived home with the CD, and I was, you know, a student at the time. I was like, oh, let's throw this on. You know, we just stuck it on, and this kind of slide comes in. Bow, 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 and I was like, oh, Jesus, this is great. And it just kind of got better. As like the whole, to me, yeah, it's a kind of classic album. But I think that might have been like Ry Cooder or someone even playing the slide.
Oh, really?
I know he's on that album. He's like 17 or something, and he's doing a lot of the slide on that album.
So right from the get-go, the minute you first heard Beefheart, you connected with it?
Oh, well, yeah, that was it. Yeah, because I loved kind of, you know, I like blues. You know, I was into, as a teenager, you know, I was kind of getting into, I like that old blues music, you know, kind of, I guess, kind of Mississippi John Hurt kind of stuff. And then maybe like John Lee Hooker. I just thought it was really cool because I used to sit at home on my own in, you know, the middle of nowhere in County Mayo where I'm from. And, you know, I like that idea of just being able to play the guitar, you know, and try and kind of make it like sound like a band or whatever, where you're kind of playing one thing with your thumb and the other thing with your kind of fingers and stuff. So I was kind of I was into that idea of kind of blues and stuff. And then Captain Beefheart just kind of, you know, he just took it off in this completely kind of deranged, different direction. And yeah, hooked.
It was. It's really strange because, like I said, I'd also, you know, had so many people, and probably Malkmus was one of them as well, like championing Beefheart. And it was just one of them. Whenever you bought a, you know, a magazine that had, you know, the 100 albums you must own, there'd always be Beefheart in this. So I was like, right, I've got to go and check it. And my initial response was, what the fuck is this? Like, and it took me ages for it to kind of click.
Yeah.
And like, it's, yeah, it wasn't. And that's why I was just interested that when you said, like, you know, that opening lick straight away, you was on board. I just, like, it took me a while to kind of process what the hell was going on.
Yeah, well, but I remember by, like, because everyone was on about, oh, a Trout Mask replica, that's the real deal. I remember getting that and being like, oh, what the fuck is this?
Well, that was my entry point.
I think Safe as Milk is a much kind of easier kind of entrance point. Yeah. But I still listen to Trout Mask replica, you know, when I'm trying to write, you know, if I'm finding it hard, especially with lyrics and stuff, I just stick that on and just kind of, you know, just take it in, and it's, you know, the way that it, a lot of it doesn't make sense, but it's just kind of, it has some kind of an effect, you know, especially in the context of the craziness of the music. So yeah, I'd still be inspired by that one.
Wonderful.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Track two, Seamus, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Yeah. Star Trekking.
I mean, I'm really curious as to where we're going with this.
So basically, when I was about six, I guess, I remember my older brother, he got a tape, maybe for Christmas. It was like the hits of 1987. And it was like a double cassette, and at all, it was some really good. I can still remember some of the tracks really well in it.
What else was on there?
Like John Farnham, mm-hmm. You know that one, the Voice.
Yep,
that was.
And a little fact on him: obviously, he's super famous in Australia, and he's a legend in Australia. They look at him like, I don't know, like some kind of Bono out there. Turns out he's born in Canvey Island, about 5 miles from where I live. He's an Essex boy.
Well, unbelievable.
There you go. You can have that. Yeah. Yeah, go on. Sorry. What else was on there?
No, actually, I do. That was definitely one of my favourites. What else was on there? Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
What's that one? Lyle Bonita, whatever it's called.
Lyle Bonita.
Yeah, that one. Johnny Logan, who was like... he had a big Eurovision hit that year. He was representing Ireland in the Eurovision, and he made the big crossover. Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody. I think that was on there.
Yeah. Have you ever seen, I had Colin Murray on this podcast, and Colin referenced Johnny Logan. And
oh, really? Yeah.
Have you ever seen him? There's a football team that sing the crowd that their song is "Hold Me Now" by Johnny Logan, and honestly, like or loathe that record, if you go on YouTube and he comes out at a match and sings it, and there's all of these grown men at this football match bawling their eyes out, just singing by Johnny Logan. It's quite something to watch, mate.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah. It's quite a tune. Yeah.
It's quite a jump from Beef Art to Johnny Logan in about 2 minutes.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. And then on the end of one of the cassettes, the last song was Star Trek, and it's the bit at the end. So, you know, and actually I remember the video quite well. As you know, the video is this kind of cool stop motion thing, and I think I kind of liked Star Trek as well at that stage, you know. And so at the very end where the song keeps like speeding up and speeding up and speeding up, and then there's like a big explosion or something, and you just kind of hear them kind of saturated in reverb, and it's like they've all died and kind of they're all like stuck in purgatory or something. And I just found that very sad.
Was that the emotion, like actual sadness? Because I mean, that's quite a joyous sounding record.
Yeah, no, it's just that last kind of 10 seconds where it kind of there's a big kind of it keeps speeding up, and then something happens, and then they just kind of disappear off into the distance. Yeah, to be seen again.
Have you heard it since?
Well, actually, when I was trying to think of what's the earliest song I could think of, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Because I really remember that tape very well, the cassette, you know, and I remember that song kind of mostly off. I was like, what was it that... And then I was like, oh, yeah, that bit at the end. So I listened to it just the other day. And, what struck me about it was actually that when I play live, a lot of my effects and stuff sound like the end of that record, which is very strange, you know, at these big reverbs.
Really?
Maybe when I was like 7, I was kind of, yeah.
Okay. So, and where was home? Where was you born then?
County Mayo in the west of Ireland.
Nice place to grow up.
Had its pluses, had its minuses. Yeah. I mean, it was very remote. It was kind of in the middle of nowhere, and the nearest small town was probably about 4 or 5 miles away. It was a bit kind of, you know, I was always looking forward to kind of getting out of there as well. But definitely it was a good place to grow up, I think, you know. Yeah, set me up.
And aside from hits of 87, was there records on at home? Would like your folks play like records and stuff in the house?
Maybe in the car. Yeah, not really in the house. It was just we used to listen to the news as far as I can remember. I remember I listened to in the car the tape that was played a lot was Neil Diamond and what else? Simon and Garfunkel. And then maybe some kind of some Irish traditional music. That was pretty. But we all went to kind of we all played music. You know, we all grew up playing music, and you know, we would have been sent off to music lessons from like, you know, 5 or 6. I used to play tin whistle, and then I played the fiddle for a while. And then when I was about 12 or 13, I was like, no, I'm not doing this. This is just really uncool. I want to play the guitar. And that's the rest is history, I guess. Although I did start when I was a bit older, then I was like, oh, you know, I wish I hadn't kind of given up those instruments. So I kind of took up the playing the fiddle again. Just so I could using it as a texture and things on my records, and just to kind of a box to get kind of sounds out of and stuff.
And so, having sort of music lessons at such a young age, like when you would hear Star Trekking or Neil Diamond or Simon and Garfunkel or anything like that, would you be listening and seeing how, you know, could you sort of dismantle it? Could you work out how it was put together? Was your ears doing that?
Yeah, well, I remember, like, my sister got a guitar first. And I remember just kind of taking the guitar off her and just, you know, I just started learning, like, songs off the radio, like U2 and stuff. So I guess I had a pretty good ear for that kind of thing. Yeah, like, I wasn't thinking about the production or anything, but I was thinking about the melodies and you know, progressions and chords and stuff. And I was in, like, you know, when I was about 12 or whatever, I think I got an electric guitar, and I remember I was big into, like, Guns N' Roses, and I remember, like, you know, learning all those kind of, I just wanted to learn guitar solos, you know. And yeah, I was able to, like, sit down and kind of from the radio or from the tape, whatever, learn off all the different parts and things. So, yeah, I guess I did kind of have that in me, or worked on it from a kind of early age. Yeah.
Well, speaking of early age, for track three, Seamus, I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Oh, so yeah, I said Gold Sounds. By Pavement.
Oh, what a record. What an album.
Yeah, because there's other, I mean, before, so I guess I was about 14 when that came out. We just got a CD player in our house in Mayo, you know, and it was like, ooh, we got a CD player. And my brother had just gone off to college, and so he started bringing home all these CDs. And like, I remember the first CD I bought was Vitalogy from Pearl Jam, which was all right, you know, but then my brother brought home this Pavement single. And I remember listening to it and just being really confused, because at first it just sounded like, you know, full of mistakes and just as what? But it was just so kind of free and loose and I just, killer, you know, guitar and just glorious kind of melody, all in like about 2.5 minutes. And yeah, that really kind of opened up a whole kind of world of, you know, this kind of college American music, like, you know, Pavement and Sebado and then like Will Oldham and Smog and all this. So yeah, that was my kind of but yeah, I remember listening to that over and over again.
I think that's very similar to Beefheart, insofar as, you know, I had, you know, in our kind of gang of mates around that time, you know, you had the people that loved, like, Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Jane's Addiction and things like that. And then there was always, you know, them people that discovered Pavement. And then it was like, it opened the doors to, exactly like you just said, Sebado. And it was like, oh, hang on a minute, like, this is, you know, Ween, and there was all of these bands that, like, you know, they would just go off down this road of this kind of slacker, lo-fi type thing, and it's glorious music, man.
Yeah, it's still, like, I'm trying to remember, there was, like, the B-side on that single as well, was amazing as well. It was just, like, an instrumental. I can't remember what it was called, but, but I was into a lot, I think. What else before that? Like, I'd kind of gone through like Rage Against the Machine and Smashing Pumpkins, and so I was into that kind of, you know, rockier stuff. But then this kind of this came along. I was like, all right, yeah, I can. It's got a kind of it's a bit more relaxing or something. You know, it's just a bit. Yeah, it's like, yeah, this kind of slacker vibe to it that I kind of. It's like, yeah, I like this. Yeah.
How did you find school, Seamus?
Yeah, I found it all right. I guess I had my ups and downs. I was a pretty good student. You know, I loved sport as well. I used to play lots of basketball and football. And
that can get students out of trouble, can't it? That can kind of keep you, that can keep you away from, like, I don't know. It feels to me, if you're good at sport, you can, it helps you get through school, I think.
Totally. Definitely. Yeah. So that was, I was as much into sport as I was into music. I kind of, with the whole music thing, I was just doing it at home, lots and lots. But I never really got into, like, any bands or anything. I just wasn't quite cool enough to kind of, be in anyone's band. So I was always at home just kind of, doing my own thing, learning tunes and learning how to play, like, Pavement songs. And
did you have a four-track or anything?
No, I didn't have a four-track. No, that was kind of further down the line. No, I didn't. But yeah, so the sport was, it was definitely a good way to kind of, get through school without too much. Yeah.
Okay. Track four. First record you bought from a record store.
Oh, yeah. Well, this one is kind of, I was thinking about this today. So the first tape I bought was Two Princes. I think the album was called Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
It was. That's a fucking terrible name for a record.
It's a pretty shite album. I think I might have listened to it once, but I really liked this single off it. So I remember I used to watch, like, the ITV chart show on a Saturday morning. I remember this single from that, and probably, like, Top the Pops as well. Like, I think it was a big hit, this Pocket or Two Princes or whatever.
Huge record.
And I just listened to that as well the other day, and I was thinking, yeah, what was so good about this? But it's actually not a bad song, and I think it's the guitar solo. As I say, I was crazy for guitar solos from, like, about 8 years old, I think. I think it's really, they have big guitar solos. But I did actually buy a tape before that, Michael Bolton, Soul Provider. But I didn't buy it. I bought it as a Christmas present from a sister. So I think I can get away with kind of...
That's a confident name for a record, isn't it? Soul Provider.
It's a pretty confident record. Yeah. He was well able to belt them out.
He could provide the soul.
Yeah, Bolton, yeah.
And at that point, I think he was also lucky enough to have three haircuts on one head.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was spectacular. Yeah.
In regards to record shops, Seamus, maybe moving on from like the early days of buying tapes and things like that, how important have record shops been for you, as you've kind of sort of started to stretch your legs as a musician and up to that to now?
Oh, like, just, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if in terms of, when I went to Dublin to college and whatever, all the music that I bought, I used to go to, like, Tower Records or where else did I go? Maybe, like, Freebird, and you just kind of pick up these. I wouldn't really have a clue before I went into the shop, and I might pick up a magazine in the shop and flick through the reviews, like, oh, this, that sounds really cool, and that's how I picked up albums by, like, Tortoise and Granddaddy and all these these bands, and I think that's kind of really kind of influenced where I went, when I started kind of figuring out how to make music. But even, like, in the last 10 or 12 years, so my brother moved to Kilkenny a long time ago, and there was a record shop in Kilkenny, or there is a record shop in Kilkenny called Rollercoaster Records, and that was run by a guy called Willie Meehan, who he passed away maybe like 3 years ago, but he was really kind of supportive. Like, I remember, I think I made my first kind of proper demo probably back in 2005 or 2006. And I remember my brother gave it to Willie, and Willie's like, ah, this is fucking, this is cool. And those guys, that record shop was, it also kind of curated this festival called the Rhythm and Roots Festival. So I think back then I was doing a lot more, it was a lot, what I was making was a lot more kind of country or kind of Americana or something. And he's like, yeah, you're gonna, we got you two gigs for the next, in the next festival. And I was like, oh wow, amazing. So we ended up kind of opening for Mark Eitzel and I can't remember who else, Richmond Fontaine maybe. It was amazing because we didn't have a clue what we were doing, really. And I didn't have a clue. But Willie was like, he always had real kind of faith. And he, so, you know, that was a real example of a record shop that, you know, it was kind of like this hub in the town. And aside from, you know, selling music, it also kind of, you know, was on the tour circuit. You know, they used to bring bands to the town. And like, Kenny is amazing. Like, it punches way above its weight as a result of those guys. And, you know, their whole kind of, it was just, their whole ethos was just music. Their whole life was music. Yeah, it's such like really special kind of place. So yeah, and the guys, Gary and Davey, they're running it now. And it's the same kind of deal. You know, even throughout the kind of pandemic and everything, they've tried to keep it open. And you know, we've played it like, where we played at, I can't remember, in Totnes, there's a festival there. And that was kind of run by the guys at Drift, Drift Record Store. And they kind of, they would have been kind of influenced by what Willie was doing in Kilkenny, you know. So this kind of network as well, I think, around Ireland and the UK and probably Europe and the state, of these kind of record shops that kind of, they're almost like the core of the industry. Or I mean, they used to be anyway. I guess nowadays everything, this, the idea of a network is you just maybe thinking of like Spotify or streaming or whatever, or getting your stuff onto like Apple Music playlists. But you know, before that, and still, like, it was all about getting someone to play your record in the record shop. So when people are in there, they're like, oh, what's that? And then, anyways, yeah, so important.
But you touched on something as well when we first started chatting as well, was saying about how you've had to sort of rethink, you know, promotion of records and stuff. You know, you probably would have been doing in-stores. And I think in-stores are, you know, are things that have been, you know, beautiful as well for independent record shops to be able to, you know, even if it's something as kind of grand as Rough Trade through to, you know, some of the small indies and like, and being able to go in there and still to this day seeing bands like actively supporting independent records, you know, stores by doing in-stores and stuff. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and they're great fun to do, like, because you just kind of rock up there and, you know, it's not like there's a big kind of stage or a big PA or something. You know, it's kind of just like shoved in a corner and it's just like, all right, cool. And they're just, you know, there's no pressure. You know, you play a few tracks and, you know, it's just a different vibe to like an actual gig, but in a really kind of nice and endearing kind of way. Yeah.
Okay. Track 5, Seamus, the song that soundtracked your years, Clubbing.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I was never like,
This does lend itself to like your local sweaty indie club and things like that. It's not got to be it's not got to be a chrome covered kind of night spot, you know, wearing a shirt.
I mean, yeah, because when I was, you know, when I was thinking about club, and I automatically think about like, I don't know, like techno or whatever, you know. But you know, when I was in my younger days, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still a bit of a clubber. You know, I'd still like you know, when I got involved with Fence Records, like, you know, all of a sudden I was going to see like Fortet and John Hopkins and Nathan Fake and these guys, you know, and I'm still kind of really into that side of, you know, music. And I guess when I, in terms of kind of clubbing, yeah, I said Devil's Haircut by Beck because, you know, that was just an album, or that was just a record we'd throw on. You know, we'd be more likely just to sit at home drinking like, you know, a bottle of Buckfast or something and then go to a gig. You know, that would be that was like our clubbing, I guess. And maybe there'd be a late club after. I think we used to go to Whelan's a lot in Dublin. And yeah, it was usually the kind of indie side of things. So I guess, yeah, Beck, Devil's Haircut, isn't a bad shout.
That's a great record.
Yeah, Audley, amazing records, and I guess it was a big influencer on me, you know. I'm kind of stuck in the 90s a little bit. When I was looking at all these, I was like, I should have something a bit more current. But I guess, you know, if we're talking about what kind of influenced...
Yeah, it's a retrospective look. Podcast. Okay, so I'm going to take you home now for track 6, a favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Oh, yeah, see, I thought this was home country.
You won't be the first.
I thought it was home country.
That's fine.
But I said... home country, because there is people from my county as well. My friend Connor, Connor Welch, he was a composer, but he passed away a few years ago as well. In interviews and stuff, I always tried to kind of, I don't want to dwell on people that have passed away too much, but he was an amazing composer, musician from Swinford, where I'm from. He released an album a posthumous album, I guess you'd call it, and that's amazing. So he's actually not just from my home county, but he's from my hometown. So probably would have been, if I was picking someone from my county, it'd be Connor. But then I think I said Roller Skate Skinny, speaking aside, just because, again, there's so many songs I love from, you know, especially at the moment. Like, you know, I have lots of friends over there, like my friend Lisa O'Neill and Junior Brother and Lancome and these people, more kind of in the folk side of things, that are all making amazing music. This tune, Roller Skate Skinny, Speed to My Side, it was just like a thumper. And I remember listening to that. Dave Fanning used to do this kind of Fanning's Fab 50. And I kind of listened to it every kind of Christmas. And I remember that was up there, maybe near the top one year. And it's just another kind of, I guess it has that kind of slacker kind of, you know, American influence to it that I really was into at that stage.
I'd never heard it, I listened to it yesterday, and it's a huge sounding record, isn't it? And it's quite epic. It's like just shy of 7 minutes as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like they were doing pretty. They were like, you know, I think they were over in America at one stage, and they were doing like maybe like Coachella or sort of Lollapalooza and these things. You know, they definitely had that kind of. That sound, but
there's almost a bit of shoegaze in there as well.
I guess it's around kind of My Bloody Valentine kind of time as well. That was, and I think, you know, to make it like songs that are like 6-7 minutes long, you know, I think they're it's really hard to kind of to write a song like that length that kind of keeps your head bobbing for the whole length. But that one for me, I think it's a phenomenal tune.
Wonderful. Last track, Seamus, a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
So my friend Ed Dowie, I don't know if you know Ed Dowie, he's phenomenal. So I think actually he might have a new track coming out, but I'm not allowed to use it. But anyways, so I know Ed from releasing music on Lost Map, which is the label that I moved on to after Fence Records. So yeah, big shout out to Fence, and also to Lost Map and Johnny Lynch and all his crew. And Ed released an album called The Uncle Sold back in 2016, maybe, and this is one of the tracks from it, Red or Grey. And myself and Ed, we did a thing together for Union Chapel in London. You know, they do this daylight music on a Saturday. They invited different artists to collaborate and do a set using the big organ in the in Union Chapel. So myself and Ed said, all right, let's do something together. So Ed said, okay, maybe we can do this song of mine, Red or Grey. And I remember I'd heard it on the record and I loved it. But then when I actually had to sing the lyrics, I was looking at the lyrics. And again, it was like, you know, Trap Mask Replica. So I was like, how did you do this? You know, and Ed was like, I don't know. It's just amazing. And that whole album is a thing of beauty. And then, you know, he's really, really good friend of mine. And, you know, about 2 years ago, we were both kind of struggling to kind of write anything. And he had this idea, you know, why don't we do this kind of why don't we do this thing every month we have to write and finish two songs, and we send them to each other. And basically our kind of the whole thing was like, the shitter the song, the better. There was no kind of pressure whatsoever, you know. It was like, so and we started sending tracks back and forth, and it was really good way. It was really inspiring. And like Ed's, the stuff Ed was singing or was sending was amazing. And I was like, oh, actually, I can't really just send any old crap. These songs coming from Ed are so amazing that I'm going to have to kind of really kind of knuckle down and try and do that. And also Ed's partner, Flo, she was involved. She was sending kind of bits of artwork that were amazing as well. And it was just a really kind of beautiful, organic way to kind of do stuff and low pressure. And that's kind of, that was the, you know, the beginning for me of this album that's coming out. That's how I kind of got a bunch of ideas together. I was like, oh, actually, you know, after about a year doing this, both myself and Ed had a kind of collection of material. I was like, gosh, you know, I'll go back in now and start kind of seeing what I can do with this stuff. And yeah, so anyways, that's why I've picked Ed Dowie, Red or Grey.
Well, as we start to wrap things up, and I'll just, you know, let's remain positive and see ourselves as, like, you know, as we come out of this awful situation we've been in for the last 7 months. What are you most looking forward to, Seamus, personally, and what have you got coming up professionally?
I mean, I guess my album is coming out. I don't know when this podcast is going out, but like my album is coming out in a week, which is incredible. You know, it's sometimes hard to kind of get as excited as I was about the last one. There's no kind of shows or anything to kind of go along with it. But then I think it's just so cool to have made another album and to be released on Domino Records, which, you know, I just love Domino Records for, like, you know, 20 years or whatever. So, you know, that's a really great thing. And I'm excited and I'm looking forward to kind of setting it off. And, you know, once that's out there, I'm going to be kind of relieved in a way, because I was like, you know, I can kind of see what the next thing to do. And we've made some, like, incredible kind of videos, like live videos with my band that we recorded here in Walthamstow in a church. I'm really excited to, you know, even though we're not able to get to do gigs, it's been kind of really cool to kind of think about doing stuff in nice locations, and, you know, make some, you know, get people involved, make some videos and things. So that's next week. And what's coming up after that then? I mean, I had a bunch of shows kind of penciled in for December that's, you know, realistically not going to happen. So I guess just kind of look forward to next year, and just, you know, I know we're going to do some gigs. And and when I was making the album, a lot of the album I wrote with the idea of playing them live with the band, and having kind of done some videos and stuff and with the band with the new tracks, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. So I'm looking forward to eventually getting on stage with the band and playing the album, you know, through from start to finish. And that's pretty much it. There's a couple of possibilities, but yeah, otherwise it's gonna probably make some t-shirts.
Wonderful.
Yeah, looking forward to making some t-shirts. Yeah.
What better place to finish than that? Seamus, like, thanks so much for your time today. I'll ensure to get this podcast out. I'll try and hurry it out for next week so it ties in with the release of the record. And best of luck with the record. And thanks again, mate. It's been really nice talking to you.
Thank you very much, Stu. It's you know, these kind of, it's so nice to do some publicity and podcast stuff and interview, because it's like, oh yeah, it's like, this is all part, this is how it used to be, you know, the kind of campaign with the album and stuff. So it's been a real pleasure. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks ever so much, Seamus.
Well, it's a nice one.
There you go, Seamus Fogarty. One absolutely lovely guy. Record's out now, so go and buy it. Go and stream it, go and listen to it, go and support it, whatever you can do. As I mentioned at the beginning, if you enjoyed the format of this podcast, then go and have a look in the archives, because there's about 170 episodes, and I'm sure there'll be some people in there that you'll be interested to hear what songs soundtrack their lives. Yeah, and also I did mention there's a Patreon. If you enjoyed this and you'd like to support the podcast, this is a labour of love, so any kind of support over there is much appreciated. And as mentioned as well, you can find out about all of this stuff at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. Have a lovely week, and I'll see you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music, and they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast. It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.